The transcript for this episode is sponsored by Seamless Docs.
Seamless Docs is an e-signature and form automation platform that enables governments to go paperless and deliver better online services to citizens and staff.
Hi, I'm Emily Lanau.
And I'm Kyle Cacciadorian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
Hashtag As if I don't already know. Hashtags. They're my favorite.
What's a hashtag? I've never heard of them or used them ever.
It would probably be better if I didn't explain hashtags. So instead, I'm going to turn it over to our very special guest, who is one of my favorite humans and one of the coolest activists I know. Will you introduce yourself, special guest?
Absolutely. It's Imani. Imani Barberin from CrutchesAndSpice.com.
Woo! Oh my god, you guys, I'm so excited. Okay, so this has nothing to do with anything, but I met Imani for the first time at South by Southwest earlier this month, and she's the best person ever. I just love her so much, but more than that, I was well aware of her for quite a long time before we actually met in person, because Imani just knows how to kill it on Twitter.
Yeah, I get in a lot of trouble on Twitter, but I don't care.
Well, see, that's the thing. I feel like I need to embrace this. So with that in mind, what is a hashtag? And I don't necessarily mean a dictionary definition, but how would you define hashtags, especially as you use them?
So I always have to explain what a hashtag is to co-workers, because I work in communications, and so I describe it kind of like you're in a crowded cocktail room and everybody's talking about everything under the sun, and people that are by the punch bowl are talking about books, and the people by the windows are talking about cocktails or alcohol or whatever. And so a hashtag is something like a bookmark. It allows you to bookmark conversations so you can participate in them when you want to. And so the more visibility a hashtag gets, the more people are talking about it. And so the more people are talking about it, the more people see it. The more visibility, the more people talk about it. So it's kind of like a movement in several characters.
I absolutely love the visual of people at a party and sort of humanizing it and taking it off of the Twitterverse. Yeah.
I also love a movement and several characters. That was very clever. That's really good.
Thank you.
So, Imani, you're basically the hashtag queen. Why are hashtags so important to the disability community? And we can talk about some of the specific hashtags that you've done, but really, hashtags in general are this huge part of disability. There's so many examples that I can think of. Some recent ones that I really like are hashtag access is love, started by Alice Wong, Sandy Ho, and Mia Mingus. And then there was also hashtag 100 out of 100, which,
oh
my God, all about inter-abled relationships. And I don't mean this in the inspirational kind of way, but I was scrolling through that hashtag on Instagram and just tearing up.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, like, I feel like a lot of able-bodied people do not understand is how important hashtags are to disability. And so the last thing you want to do as a public figure like Dr. Phil, who was the inspiration behind it in more of an infamous kind of way, is piss off a bunch of people for whom community is built online. So, it's
really good point.
Disabled people, hashtags and social media especially, are a way to build community, because disability can be so isolating at times. You know, not everything is accessible. Your body is hurting all the time. And you want to be able to commiserate with people that are like you and experience the same things. And so hashtags allow people to talk about the things that affect their lives by diagnosis, by topic, or by just whatever inspires them in that moment. And so it's extremely important to the disability community.
Yeah, having that ability to jump on Twitter or Instagram and be like, this is what I need to talk about right now, and knowing that there's probably a hashtag for that conversation.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
It is, and I feel like it's almost like people opening the door to you and saying, welcome in, we know what you're going through, let's sit down and talk about it. And that's so comforting.
Isn't there a risk, though, where non-disabled people come in and are like, I'm going to trample all over your hashtag because I totally get what you're talking about, or I totally disagree what you're talking about with what you're talking about?
Yeah, it happens all the time. Even with the last hashtag I created, which was Ableds Are Weird, able-bodied people wanted to create a counter hashtag saying disabled people are weird. I was like, well, that's kind of the point of what I'm talking about. You already treat us like we're weird, which is why we're talking about it. So yeah. There's always going to be pushback, and there's always going to be people that try to muddy the waters. But there are people that are genuinely looking to reach out and communicate with one another. And that's who I'm here for.
And we'll link to the hashtags that we reference. But hashtag Ableds Are Weird is your latest one.
Yes.
And my favorite one, too.
I'm so glad. I did not expect for that to take off quite like it did. I actually tweeted it right before I went to bed. And then I retweeted a couple of people that tweeted under that hashtag. And then I went to sleep. And I wake up the next morning and somebody messaged me. It's like, you're trending.
That must have been a nice surprise.
Well, I mean, I was confused as to why. But...
Yeah, you didn't know why yet. That's right.
Yeah, I was like, what?
What did I do?
Exactly. Did I say something wrong? And yeah, people really responded to it. And I often reflect on the ways in which we're treated that are just plain strange. That if an able-bodied person have to go through that, they'd be like, dang, these people are just weird. This is just objectively weird. And so I felt like other people could feel that way, too. Yeah.
Oh, I feel that way on a regular basis. And
yeah.
The thing about hashtag Ableds Are Weird is that I actually didn't jump on the bandwagon right away because I could not figure out which story I wanted to tweet.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So Emily and I were at South by Southwest. And, like, we were in our scooters going down the street. And some guy said something to you. He goes, oh, he's like, you better slow down. What did he say?
I think it was like, you better slow down so you don't hurt anyone, or just, I don't know, one of those annoying comments.
Yeah, and you went like, you just like looked over your shoulder and was like, you haven't heard that 1,000 times today. And like rolled off, and it was the funniest thing. But those things happen every single day.
Yeah, and it's like people think they're so funny, but it's like you're not funny, you're annoying. And also, I think that having you with me might have emboldened me because I get very nervous when I'm on my own. But when I'm with another disabled person, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to tell you how you just made me feel.
We actually went through that on the last episode. You were telling a similar story about how you don't usually get to feel emboldened. And how you were disappointed that you couldn't sick yourself on the person because they were just being nice.
Yeah, this is a problem that I run into on a regular basis. And my mother actually just called me on my newfound discovery that I like to call people out on their when they say things to me. She was like, someone's going to punch you one day.
Well, I mean, yeah. But, like...
It's not good optics, though. No one's going to punch the girl in the wheelchair.
I hope not.
You just play upon that. Like, just be like, do you really want to go down this road? Because I have a camera.
Plus, you're wearing glasses. That's like a two... And you're a woman. That's like three things that you don't do.
Oh, yeah. Never punch someone with glass on their face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've established how to handle yourself with a disabled person, don't punch them. Etiquette 101.
Yeah,
don't punch people is pretty high up on the list of things not to do.
Just don't touch us.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. No, that's a real one. That one wasn't a joke, everybody. That's a real one.
Like, I mean, I sing with a little lilt to my voice, but don't touch us. It's just weird. Like, stop. Like, and one of the reasons that you, sorry, one sec. Something that you pointed to that your mother had said, that people are just being nice, or that you said that people are just being nice, that's part of the issue, right? It's like, just because you're trying to be nice does not mean I want your help or want you touching me. And, yeah. And to justify it saying you want to help, that's just insulting to my intelligence.
And I feel like that connects really well to another hashtag that you created, again, hashtag queen, things disabled people know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I tweeted that hashtag after the whole Bryan Cranston, the upside scandal, which feels like a scandal within our own community, but nobody else was really upset by it like us. And so a lot of the pushback from the article that I wrote about Bryan Cranston taking this role when it could have gone to a disabled performer was that, well, disabled people have nothing to add. Disabled people have no talent. That was the general theme, that people categorize an entire population of nearly a fifth of this country saying that they have no talent or nothing to add and no nuance to give. And so things disabled people know really discussed the ways in which disabled people know things about being disabled that you can't get outside of lived experience.
And how do people stumble upon these hashtags, though? The people who need to be hearing this stuff. I mean, this is what I always think about. I feel like we tend to exist in a bubble. Kyle and I talk about this all the time.
Trying shouting to get outside, into the void.
Yeah, getting outside that echo chamber. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I know there's no perfect science to how you reach people, quote unquote, on the outside. But what's been your experience with, you know, people who really need to be reading the messages on the hashtags actually getting exposed to it?
It's a real big hit or miss. I find that, so I study analytics a lot on my own profile. A little Twitter trick for anybody who has Twitter. Every profile has analytics attached to it on the desktop of your Twitter profile. So I kind of look at who's following me, as well as what times to post and what are my most effective posts. And so, but even with all that knowledge, it's really a crapshoot of who's paying attention at that exact time. And that plays a lot into the way these hashtags are successful. And I really try to make them as open as possible. I find that the hashtags I create are most effective because they give disabled people an opportunity to talk to one another rather than shout outward to the void. And I find that that's the best way to build community, is to give people a chance to relate.
Have you seen real world impact of your hashtags? Because that's the other thing that Kyle and I talk about a lot, is how can we move this off the internet and have an actual impact on people outside of that?
Well, more and more people are asking me to speak publicly and give presentations on ableism and things like that. You can email me. It's on my profile.
Don't worry. We'll link all your good stuff.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
But yeah, so a lot of people are asking me to do it in real time, and they're really opening up to talking to me. But I do get a lot of one-on-one messages from people saying, you've opened my eyes, but it's really hard to gauge whether this will actually change anything. I don't think it'll be 10 years out when I can really feel like I see the results of the work I'm doing now. And that's a little frustrating, because you feel like you're trying to push the needle, and you can't really tell if any of it's working.
I worry about that all the time. I'm like, why am I doing this? Some days I literally wake up and I'm like, is anybody going to listen today? And I don't mean that in a pessimistic way. I just sort of mean it in a way like I need to refocus and recenter myself and be like, there is a bigger purpose to all of this.
Yeah, and it feels kind of like, activism feels like No Child Left Behind, where we're constantly kind of like repeating the exact same message over and over again in the hopes that as many people as possible get it. And we keep reiterating the exact same points and facts. and it's really hard to feel like you're actually making any sort of a difference. And so I really do appreciate when people reach out to me and say, you've really helped me to see A, B, or C. But it's really hard.
So I have a question for you, though.
Shoot.
Why do you think people, and I'm going to make the worst phrase ever into a verb right now, everybody, so stand back. Why do you think people, all lives matter, your hashtags? I know that we talked about ables are weird like 5 whole minutes ago, but when you said that there was a counter hashtag started because of it, I just couldn't shake that. It's like,
yeah,
because like you said, you know, the reason that you made that hashtag is because that's what able-bodied people think of us anyway. And I was curious if you had any thoughts as to why people might do that, except the, you know, the hollow answer of, well, you know, they just don't like being involved in something they can't be in, which, like, yeah, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I feel like I'm also Black, so I see this with Black Lives Matter too, and I feel like if they can establish a moral equivalence, then their actions don't feel as bad, or they don't feel as responsible to change them either. That's why I feel like people, all lives matter. Really, any hashtag that is giving voice to marginalized people, because if you call somebody out and then you try to call them out, it's basically whataboutism and trying to disperse some of the blame of your own actions onto other people, even though that's not really what's being addressed at the time.
It's very much like also a not all able people thing. Yeah. I noticed that too. Yeah, I feel like whenever I sort of comb through the dialogue that your hashtags tend to start, you have all these people who are like, hey, you need to be paying attention to what these disabled people are saying. And then you have someone who's too busy comparing their oppression to the oppression of disabled people or Black disabled people especially, or you have people who are like, but what about me? Or you have people who are like, well, I don't do that. And it's like,
I just never understood the, but I don't do that people, because it's like, in any situation, not just this one, it's like, we know not everyone does all of these things. No one is saying that. It's just that this is a real world example of things that happen.
But you've also probably been guilty of something like it at some point.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. I know that makes you feel bad, but like, that's the point. You gotta look at yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, hold a mirror up. Like, actually evaluate things. And can I just say, I have no like desire to coddle the feelings of able-bodied people when it comes to disability. None at all. Every way in which we talk about disability is meant for able-bodied understanding, meant to make them feel better around us, meant to coddle them, meant to make hope that they understand. And I'm not going to be one more person that does that.
I think that's why you get yourself in trouble so much.
No, but I mean, but we need, that's a valid position in this world. You know, Emily and I, we play the good cops a lot. And in fact, me more than you, but we do need people like you that just don't have time for that.
And it bothers me that people try to get me to conform to that yet again, and play into this narrative of she's an inspiration, so just be an inspiration to everybody. No, I don't want to be. I want to give voice to people that are hurting and who feel the effects of media representations that didn't even bother to involve them in the creative process, that have to live through this world knowing that they're seen in a certain way. So it really does not move me to make one more representation that makes able-bodied people feel better.
And to top it all off, we're often left out of hashtag movements that are
for other,
broader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me Too movement.
Perfect example. Yeah. And So then when we try to insert ourselves in those conversations, you're often told to go away there too. So it's like, how do you even find your home?
Yeah, and we're even all lives matter in other hashtags. You know, well, we're all suffering. It's like, yeah, however, I'm not saying that we're not, but we just need to pay attention to this intersection of identity that is being ignored. And even so, people try to shut us down.
And also, like, you probably have your own hashtag too. Like, just look for it. You know, whichever group you're in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just gonna say though, like, hashtag white men.
I mean, well, nobody. I'm sorry. I should have had an asterisk at the end of my sentence. I didn't.
Yeah.
I meant
everybody but the, well, you know,
men's rights.
Those people.
Oh, they're the hashtag for that.
Those people. Sure. Oh, there is MGTOW. That's a real thing. Men go what? Their own way. Look,
why?
you're not gonna know this because you're not a dude on the internet, but that's a real thing. It's exactly what you think it is.
Is it marked on the side of the street? Like, what path are they going? What way are
where are they going?
Yeah, like,
who the f*** knows, man? I'm not in that. I don't know where they're going.
Yeah, hashtags can definitely go either way, that's for sure. They can either be really, really empowering, or they can just be a place where a bunch of awful, horrible trolls all come together.
Just stir up fascism on the internet? Yeah, it's fine.
But I guess, like, that's kind of the thing about social media in general, right? Like, it can be used for incredible good and incredible evil.
Yeah, it is. It's frightening because, you know, it's like a fine line because all these platforms are like, it's free speech. But it's not just free speech. You know, people are being radicalized in many different ways online and using, you know, the same hashtags I use to bring people together to tear people apart. So it's scary in some ways.
It is really scary. I was reading an article in The Atlantic about how Instagram is really where a lot of hatefulness and conspiracy theories are taking life. Apparently there's like hashtag QAnon, which I don't know.
Oh my God.
About.
Oh yeah.
That's for a different day, Emily. We'll have a day yeah. for that.
But apparently, so like, this is how it starts. I was reading in the article, a kid found the hashtag, became curious, followed more Instagram accounts about it, and suddenly became a convert to this way of thinking. And so, I mean, there's a dark side to hashtags. It's unfortunate, but there is.
This is why people still believe in flat Earth, okay? Like, this is like, you can't, but you're right. You're absolutely right. For every good hashtag, there's like five ones.
Yeah, and QAnon is one of those deep dives that, like, you'll have to come up for air and, like,
yeah, that's,
visit a place. Yeah,
that's a rabbit hole, Emily. That's not.
Yeah, I guess that's a rabbit hole that is either for another day or that I will never go down. But, I mean, I just think it's worth pointing out that, you know, the same things that can be used positively can also be used negatively, unfortunately. But I think that actually raises a really cool point, Kyle, that we were talking about preparing for this podcast, like how the negative can also become the positive in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like hashtag taco trucks in every corner, hashtag nevertheless she persisted, even hashtag 100 out of 100 that we brought up earlier. Those are all examples of where, you know, negative or negative sounding things were spun in the exact opposite direction by the people for whom it affected to prove the opposite point. And me and Emily were like, oh, we should talk about that. But I don't know. To me, that's really neat because it just shows the power of community when it all comes together on a place like Twitter. And also that there's like no word for that phenomenon. So I think we should make one. Just saying.
Hashtagify.
There you go.
Is that a thing?
See, this is why she's the hashtag queen.
Oh, Imani is the social media queen. I mean, just really.
Which, that's going to be a hashtag that we use when we promote this episode, is hashtag queen.
Thank you so much.
Well, oh my God.
Like, I didn't like Twitter in the beginning. I was just like, what is this thing? And I started my profile in like 2009, and I didn't really start tweeting until like 2013, but for some reason I had the same profile the entire time. So Twitter is fairly new in my life. It's only been maybe 5 years since I started tweeting earnestly.
I started my account in 2013 but it was only because I was doing an internship program, and it seemed like all the cool kids were on social media, and all of the organizations were on social media, and not just, like, a personal Facebook. And I was like, oh my god, I guess I have to do this. So, you know, I
started getting involved, like, the teachers would start signing, you need to start a Twitter account, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just did it because I thought it was a thing I was supposed to do. I followed a couple of disability organizations, and I was like, all right, what do I do now? And then all of a sudden, it just became this thriving place of activism and commiseration and understanding and education, and also a swamp full of trolls. But like,
and I think we need to give credit to, you know, Alice Wong, Greg Barrettin, and Andrew Poolrang, who started Crypt the Vote, which really kind of put disability online activism on the map. During the election. Not that people weren't doing it beforehand, but they really got a lot of national attention for the work they were doing with disability and voting.
Yeah, I think that might be like one of the original disability hashtags that I remember having not only virality, but staying power.
Also, yeah. The real world impact that you were mentioning earlier, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like moving your activism off of Twitter and into the actual voting process.
Exactly. And we get the legislators to pay attention.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you for bringing that up. I think the problem is, at this point, there's so many hashtags that keeping track of all of them in our minds has become a challenge. So I'm glad that you brought up hashtag Crypt the Vote, because that is definitely at the top of my list for some of the most impactful work. But I think that also kind of gave rise to conversations within the disability community about slacktivism, which I think is something that we need to talk about when we're talking about hashtags. Because, I mean, I can't count how many times I've heard the argument that if your activism is all online, then you're a slacker.
Yeah, and it's such an ableist argument that disabled people can't be change makers from behind their phones or computers, when we're really driving a lot of the conversation online. I feel like disabled people and Black women, like, if we were to team up together, we would rule the internet. Like, and we drive these conversations forward. We influence change. And it's not, we're not slackers at all. There are people that put hours of work into this, into hashtags and into movements and conversations and making sure that people feel heard. Hours every week. It's almost, for some, it's almost like their full-time job. So it's not slacktivism at all.
I mean, you went hard with I think, what was it, hashtag 1 for 7?
Yeah, 1 for 7.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, there's a young boy named Seven Bridges who unfortunately committed suicide because he was bullied based on both his race and his disability. He wore a colostomy bag and was driven to do this horrible thing to himself. And as somebody who, you know, almost didn't make it for the exact same reasons, with my own disability, I feel like it's my duty to kind of give voice to disabled Black people who are not really seen in the media just yet or as widely. So I started 1 for 7 because there had been a hashtag called Bags Out for 7, which addressed the ableism he experienced, but not the racial implications of it. And so I really got a lot of disabled Black people to contribute and to send in videos to me. And it created like this video saying you're not alone. And a lot of these disabled Black activists had messages of the same kind. So it was really important to me because these are kids that feel completely isolated, not just by their disability overall, but by their disability in the Black community, and then their race in the disability community, and they're in situations where they feel like they're the only one, and I wanted to let them know that they're not at all. We see you. We have felt the same pain you're feeling, and you can make it out of it.
And that was so much more than just a hashtag. I mean, the video that you put together to really emphasize that people are not alone, to put that human face behind the hashtag, I mean, that's powerful. And so, I mean, if ever there was the exact opposite of slacktivism, that's it.
Yeah, and I you know, it did take me some work, you know, it did take me editing the video, adding subtitles and so, but it was something I don't mind doing because I know it's such an important topic to talk about.
The amount of unpaid labor that disabled people do creating content on social media is unreal. I know that's a topic change from One for Seven, but I hope people will go watch that video.
Yeah, I really do. It's pinned to my profile. I haven't taken it down, and I won't take it down.
Oh, yeah, good. I'm glad it's still pinned. But we can also link it, too.
We will. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, it's a lot. I work, like, 40 hours a week for my day job, and I feel like I work, like, another 40 doing just activism. So I do two things. I don't walk in a straight line, and I don't sleep, so.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle and I do this podcast largely unpaid and unsupported. I mean, for us, it's one of those things where we see a void and we want to fill it. And yeah. I think that's what happens online.
Yeah, you do it because it matters, not because, you know, it'll give you money or anything. And so it's much to my parents' detriment. Like, they really don't like the idea of me just going into things with the expectation I won't be paid. It bothers them. They're like, you need money. You have actual life to live, and bills to pay and student loans. So, but I don't really go into things with the expectation that somebody will pay me, even though I know that I really should.
I think we all need to work on that.
Yeah, we really do. We need to get like a conference together and be like, you need to start demanding what you're worth.
A disability empowerment conference, but not the cheesy kind.
Oh yeah, like no matching t-shirts. Everybody just come as they are, you know.
Although I will say we did the matching t-shirt thing and I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah, I really like that photo from Hannah Sawyer. For those who don't know, it started the This Body is Worthy movement, and that's the picture that that went viral of me. I'm wearing that t-shirt. So I will tweet that out once she gets a link to selling those.
Yeah, there's another hashtag, This Body is Worthy. I mean,
yeah,
there's so much good. On.
Yeah, it's
so much good on hashtag disability Twitter, which is also a hashtag.
It is. It's getting really meta.
It is.
My God.
Yeah.
Although I have to be very, very real with you, and I'm ashamed to admit this, I did not even think to look up hashtag disability Twitter. I just thought that disability Twitter was a concept that had no hashtag to it. I just thought it was a series of hashtags, not a hashtag in and of itself. I like just discovered this last week.
I thought the same thing about Black Twitter for a while, and then I was like, oh no, this is an actual hashtag, you know. And but disability Twitter is kind of the same thing, where, you know, it's an actual bookmark to that conversation.
Okay, but is there hashtag Black Disability Twitter?
Not yet.
You're welcome. I get a portion of the proceeds from this. I'll donate it right back to like Black Lives Matter or something, but I just, you know.
I'll give you exactly 50% of my unpaid labor on that.
Great. Oh my God, thanks.
You're welcome.
I want those exposure dollars.
Yeah. give me some of that exposure stuff. I'm so sick of being paid in exposure.
We did an episode on us recently where we had been asked to work with an organization and they approached us, and then when we were like, okay, you can pay us, they were like, nope,
that's
no, we can't.
Especially when you consider like subminimum wage and disabled labor issues, and then expect that disabled people will be not paid. That's gross.
They were a disability organization too. Like, you know, they know better. You know, they knew better. So
that is the worst.
Yeah, it was complete.
They're the worst offenders.
It was complete horseshit. Oh, yeah, you're right. You know what? You're right, Emily. They are.
Yeah, but I mean, I do think that the conversation of knowing what you're worth is a conversation in and of itself, but it is so relevant to hashtag culture and to online activism, because we do all of this work of educating for free.
So now that I've gotten a lot of exposure from all the hashtags that I do, and now people have started demanding my labor. Like, help me with this. I'm like, you know, I have an actual job too. Like, people have asked me to provide resources for their paper or give them advice on A, B, or C issue. I'm like, well, if you want to pay me for my time. And then they're like, well, aren't you an activist? I'm like, yeah, but I still have bills.
So. Yeah, my favorite thing lately has been, can you just read this thing for me, or can you just answer these 25 questions via email for the paper that I have to write that's due tomorrow at 10 a.m.?
It's only 25 questions.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
Like, if
no.
If you give me more than five, I'm already overwhelmed. Like, if you give me more than five and no time to mentally prepare to answer them, I'm already overwhelmed. Like, it's too much for me. And so now, I try not to ignore people, because I know people are really trying to reach out to me. But at the same time, it's a lot of requests for just, you know, no. And I feel like people are becoming belligerent when either I say no, or if I don't answer them in time. Like, I don't have the time to answer you right now. I'll answer you when I can answer you.
I think a really good lesson that I learned from another activist who does a lot on Twitter, Blair Amani, not the same Amani that we're talking to.
Blair Amani's a good friend of mine. Aww.
Yeah. So Blair Amani is fantastic. And she has an FAQ page on her website that she refers people to every single time someone asks a repeat of the same question that she's already gotten 20 times in the last hour.
Yeah. That's a really great idea.
Yeah. It actually went viral, didn't it? She said that, like, she's retweeted it so many times, people are just like, hey, I read your fact page, you know?
And so I feel like, because we're constantly doing this work of educating, my initial reaction to people now is like, just Google me with the phrase that you're trying to find out, and you're probably going to find something that I wrote about it, tweeted about it, said about it in an interview. Like,
and all of our pages have search functions. I just want to let people know. And we do tag things. Like, so
yeah.
We make sure that it's easy to access if you want it. So it's really, you know.
Kyle is our search engine optimization dude. He's the one who handles all that stuff.
Yep.
Teach me your face.
I will. And I but not for free. No, for you.
Oh, absolutely not. I will pay that you money now. I always pay.
No. I can help you though, if you need some, just email me.
One day.
There's a big difference to me between disabled people helping disabled people, and I don't mean like do the work for me. I mean like exchanges of knowledge.
That's true. But also like to that point though, like If I really like believe in what you believe in, like I probably want to pay you. Like I will never ask anyone for like a friend discount. It's like no. Tell me what the number is, and I'm supporting your business.
And then you know if you're somebody that wants to know somebody's price and they're really close to you, if you can't afford it, just say it. Be like, I'm gonna wait until I can afford this. You know, let them know that you still want to support their work, but that you still want to pay them full price for their labor.
Absolutely.
I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we all got paid full price for our labor, and that some disabled people weren't still being paid sub-minimum wage, and that people valued what disabled people did and said? Just, you know, some wishful thinking here.
Yeah, I mean, well, even just with the Oscars, there was like there's almost like this dichotomy of what happened at the Oscars, where disabled people who were putting together swag bags that are valued in the thousands are being paid 18 cents an hour. Meanwhile, you know, Selma Blair is on the red carpet and she's with her cane, which is excellent. But there's like two sides to this story, and it is really emblematic of the disabled struggle, you know? On the one side, you have people looking into this life and saying, what an inspiration, it's so exciting. And on the other side, you have the more day-to-day reality of people who don't have that type of wealth, who are being paid below the minimum wage to put together, you know, these symbols of wealth and capitalism. So it's very upsetting.
Yeah, I've been struggling with that too, because it's like we are basically putting this beacon of privilege on a pedestal, mm-hmm. and that doesn't deny the fact that Selma Blair does have a disability, but just that there's this huge difference between celebrating your thin, rich, white, privileged, formerly able-bodied
body,
you know.
Yeah, and the the question really becomes too, not only you know, will she walk the red carpet again, is will she be able to get work again, you know? And if she gets work, will they pay her commiserate with what her experience is? That's the real question.
And I mean, this goes back to another hashtag that you created again, hashtag queen, diss the Oscars.
Yeah, diss the Oscars was a conversation during Oscars night, talking about representations in the media of disabled people, and only 2.5% of all speaking roles on, I believe it's TV and film, are disabled characters, and of those, only a handful are played by disabled people. So when we talk about people being involved in the media, the implications with Selma Blair is, I don't know if she'll be able to get roles now. You know, she's happy that she has a diagnosis. She's not living into this idea of hating herself for her disability. That goes counter to almost everything we see in the media about disability currently. So I really question, I would really love to see her in new roles. I'd love to see her in another sequel of Cruel Intentions, but I don't know if that'll happen. But yeah, it's really a question of whether or not she will be able to be employed now.
I want to see her in like the 87th sequel to Legally Blonde, which is my movie that I secretly, not so secretly, love, even though I know that may be the whitest thing I've ever said.
Nope.
Well, I feel like every disabled person has their own version of Bend and Snap, so.
Oh my god, that's so true. That's so true. Bend and Snap. Okay, this is not relevant, but so important. The disabled Bend and Snap. Oh my god.
Bend and Snap like this is out of place.
Hashtag diss the Bend and Snap. Okay, oh everybody. God. Send us your videos.
I also want to just, like, on another one, like, the accessible twerk. I want there to be, like, a... There just has to be one. Just for my satisfaction, I need an accessible twerk.
I'm ready. Someone send it to us.
Gonna make it happen, Emily?
Yes.
I can't. I'm not even gonna try to twerk.
I tried it once, but I feel like I fell over. But I don't remember.
Typical. That's typical disability stuff, though.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. So before we drag everybody down this rabbit hole of Bend and Snap and twerking, so Kyle and I like to do something at the end of every episode where we give a final takeaway, something that we want to leave our listeners with as they sort of digest what we've been talking about. So do you have something that you'd like to leave with our listeners about hashtag culture and hashtag activism and the use of hashtags in the disability community? What is it that you would leave people with?
What should I say about hashtag culture and disability? I would say that hashtags are deeply important to disabled people wanting to form community with one another, wanting to feel understood about the experiences that they have. A lot of times we're not believed among our able-bodied peers about some of the things that we face, but disabled people will be there and say, I have been through that too. I understand what you're going through and you're not alone. And that literally saves lives. I've always said, and will continue to say, the disability community saves lives. And it's very important, especially online, where people are isolated and scared. So I would say ignore the trolls, ignore the people that say that none of this works, and really tune in to what disabled people are saying. And I just want to let disabled people know that you matter and I hear what you're saying, and I will always be there listening.
That's true. She's a good listener. Can confirm. Yeah, but I mean, really, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that having that safe place to go, although it can be fraught with a lot of landmines and trolls, at the end of the day, a hashtag and Twitter can still be a safe place to go. Facebook can still be a safe place to go. Yeah. Instagram, where you can find those connections and that solidarity. And I think that's something that we can't take away from the value of social media, is what it can do to bring disabled people together. So that's my final takeaway. And Kyle, it looks like you're going to get the last word.
I don't want the last word. Oh, come on. You're going to have me follow up with that? You always do this to me. You always do this to me. You have two. You have
Sorry.
Cool people speak first, and then you're a cool person, and then it's my turn, and I'm just like, "Hi, it's me. I'm disabled."
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
No, I don't really have one, because Imani said everything that I could have possibly said way better than I could have possibly said it, and Emily, you were pretty good too. So I'm just gonna say that Imani is like a really baller guest, and this has been really, really, really cool.
There's a good final takeaway.
Baller guest. What the accessible twerk. What a
Oh yeah, we're gonna work on that.
Yeah.
That's my real final takeaway. Please send me your accessible twerking videos and your accessible bend and snaps, and just let me live in this moment and enjoy this.
Please do. Thank you.
So on that note, this has been another episode of the Accessible Stall. And Imani, can you tell the lovely people where they can find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Imani _.
People can call you?
You can call me. Here's my number.
I refuse. I get enough emails. You can find me at Imani _Barbarin or on my website, crutchesandspice.com.
And if you want to find us, the Little Old Accessible Stall, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or if you'd like to support us on Patreon, even just $1 a month will help us make this amazing show with really baller guests accessible.
This has been another episode of the Accessible Stall, and might we all say, you look good today.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.